We're talking with Steve Thompson, Oklahoma Farm Bureau. Steve, you're just across the street now from the Capitol. Deadline week has come, has wrapped up. Lawmakers have sent bills from the House to the Senate to the House, vice versa. What sticks out in your mind? What has really jumped out here now that we've got this important deadline behind us?
Well, Ron, it was a very wild week. That's the first thing that sticks out is when you have a deadline week with a lot of things that have to pass off the floor. Some of them very controversial, very emotional. And when you layer in Ag Day at the Capitol on the culmination of that week, it was a very, very busy week for us at Farm Bureau and Oklahoma Agriculture. But I think it was a good week. I think a lot of really good work was done, and we considered a lot of significant issues this week.
And of course, you layer onto that last week, Youth Expo, only, 2 days they actually were in session. So you had a lot of stuff piled into this week.
That's right. You know, they talk about that you don't get anything done till the last minute. This was a prime example of that because we were proud that they did have a spring break last week, so several of us could spend some time in the barns. But they had a lot of ground to cover this week, and so they were there late a few evenings. In fact, Wednesday night it was almost midnight before the Senate got done dealing with what was probably the most controversial issue so far of the year, having to do with school vouchers and public versus private and how tax money would be spent. So they had a lot of work to do this week, partially because of the way the schedule had lined up leading into this week.
On education, let's start there. What came out or didn't come out?
Well, Senator Greg Treat had announced his priority was educational savings account bill. They call it ESA. Some folks call it a voucher. It can really make folks mad depending upon what term you use with that. But I think we're all talking about the same thing there that would create a system for folks to take part of the tax dollars that goes to a school from the state and then take it down the road to a private school or other type of venue for other educational opportunities, and really hit a nerve with public school issues. Sometimes that those bring out a lot of emotions all over the state, and sometimes the things that happen in a rural area are a little different than those in urban areas. But that bill had advanced out of two different committees, relatively close votes in both. It was a priority, as I mentioned, of President Pro Tem Treat as well as Governor Stitt, but it had been very much on the blacklist of our friends in the House of Representatives, led by Speaker Charles McCall. Had said that even if it passed out of the Senate, he wasn't going to hear it. So they had been on the agenda most days of session for the last week and a half, but it finally came up on Wednesday night about 8 o'clock, and they worked on it right up till midnight, and it ultimately failed to receive the majority of the Senate. I believe the final vote there was 22 yes to 24 no, and it vacillated back and forth. At one point in time, it got up to 24 yes votes, but they couldn't quite get the 25th. And after about 2 hours of leaving the roll open and a little bit of maneuvering on the floor and off in the side offices, they finally let that go. So that particular vehicle is out of commission for this session. But I wouldn't totally dismiss that as something that might not come back up in one form or fashion, because it truly is a priority of the Senate leadership at the top level and the governor. And so I expect some form of that issue to be as part of the discussion and the negotiations moving forward. And whether it really reemerges in 2022 or in future years, I think that is still something that we need to keep on the front of our minds.
Things that maybe are more closely tied to some of the priorities of the ag groups, including Farm Bureau.
Well, the Senate ran a large number of marijuana bills, and I know some folks get tired of hearing that update, but truly that's one of our biggest issues this session and has been for the last year. And I think we counted just on the Senate side in the last couple of days, there were 11 bills that were on our priority list. I think there were maybe 15 to 18 that actually ran, some of them less related to what we work on. All those are just chugging right along. We've been very, very pleased at how we've been received and our partners, both with other forms of government and law enforcement besides our ag community that has worked on those. We've worked in concert very, very well and helped each other out. After what happened last year and didn't happen, there was such a priority placed by all of us to make sure that we did our homework, we worked together, that nothing derailed us on that. Now, I say all that, We're still only halfway through the process. There's a number of things that can go wrong, but there's a large number of bills that take small bites of the apple, whether it has to do with requiring signage for grow facilities, whether it requiring bonds before they start operations. So we're seeing some of these folks just kind of up overnight and leave behind a bit of a mess. Some of the bonding requirements are still bonding and signage. Spray drift. Our number one issue, I think, from members last year was fear over liability if they were spraying ag chemicals near one of these grow facilities. The bill there, that's still truly a work in progress as a way to try to limit the liability of ag producers across the fence. That bill is advanced. And working with our friends in law enforcement, there's a number of changes to both licensure fees, structure, what you can and can't qualify for, and if you do something illegal, what your punishment are. Some of the penalties really weren't a deterrent and didn't allow law enforcement to do their job. And so there's probably half a dozen different bills that make small changes but meaningful changes to the system with that. And so that was one of the big kind of surprisingly quiet topics of this deadline week is how many of those passed through with very little controversy to this point. So So we're all very optimistic that we're going to see, even if we run into hurdles later on in session, we stand very optimistic that the state will make significant progress in a very needed area that was very dear to our members last fall.
And what the House had already moved some measures. We've got bills really going both directions, right?
That's correct. A couple weeks ago, the House did kind of a press rollout of theirs, and they've been pushing them across. And while they had several that were important and key to us, there was a few that weren't on their list that we were really pleased to see that those remained alive in the Senate. And so I think by the time they cross over, if you add them all up, most of the things that we dove into were still out there and still working. And there are a few of them that do need a little bit of work left to make sure that we get them as good as we can. But we're very optimistic.
I know that House Ag Committee Chair Kerbs was really interested in this idea of moving the state level nutrition programs. Any traction on that?
Yes, that bill is advancing to this point. There have been a little bit more interest just recently. That was kind of a quiet issue early on. I think there's been a little media coverage of that, and I think it's turned into a little bit of a political wedge issue as of late. But in visiting with him, he has just really thought this through and has had some firsthand experience working with the school system during some of the COVID issues and with both USDA and school lunch programs. And as you know, he's got a very close relationship with the Department of Agriculture, and we all hold them in high regard. And there were some accountability issues at the Department of Education and concerns that were they really being accountable to the taxpayers and to the kids in their system. Representative Kerbs is a great champion of agriculture and a good friend of all of ours, and we're excited that he's tackling this issue. And it's not something that most of us would have ever considered, but due to his firsthand experience, he saw some things that just weren't adding up right. And so he's trying to clean up the system a little bit and make sure that the kids get what they need. And as far as the taxpayers, both federally and state, have the right accountability. There were some bumps in the road with the Department of Education, and it would be a new undertaking for the Department of Agriculture. So there's still a lot to be worked out there. And I think everybody's got their eyes wide open that if it gets to a place where it doesn't make sense, I know that he will pull back from that. But so far, I think he's asking the right questions and pushing the right buttons. And so we're excited to see what he can get done there.
And one of these things that kind of just popped up on you was this conversation about electrical poles out in the rural parts of a state. Tell me about that.
That has been, if there wasn't nine other major things going on this week, I would have told you. And in some ways, it was really the story of the week. Our friends with electric cooperatives were camped out at the Capitol almost every day this week, and we're very close to those folks because, frankly, a number of Oklahoma Farm Bureau members are electric cooperative members. And so we heard quite a bit from them and an increasing frequency the last week to 10 days. There's been a discussion and debate about if a telecommunication company seeks to use an electric cooperative's pole to run fiber for broadband, how much should they have to pay to attach to their pole? Because it doesn't make any sense as landowners or anybody for us to add new poles along the right of way. So there has to be a mutually agreeable solution there. And currently, there was no cap on that. The co-op could charge whatever they wanted. And there were allegations floating around. I don't know if it was substantiated or not, that sometimes they were depressing competition and charging rates that were a little bit unreasonable there. It's in everybody's best interest that get to a reasonable place. And our priority was to make sure that the cooperatives were adequately compensated without limiting options for our members. We talk about this all the time. Rural broadband has been a priority for a number of years. We've seen an increasing investment from the federal government that might make it cost effective for a few more parts of the state that it really wasn't before. Mm-hmm. And this emerged as a possible hurdle to that if there's another cost that could escalate wildly moving forward. We needed to get a handle on that. And so there were a lot of late nights on that this week, a lot of negotiation, and we were very proud. We were a small piece of a big puzzle to try to bring everybody together. And they have what I think is a very agreeable solution there. I know our friends at Hillary Communications played a vital role in making that deal happen. And we're proud of the efforts that they did. They were at the Capitol quite a bit this week. And very excited about one of the things that I'm going to call an incentive rate. If you're the first fiber optic for broadband going down one of the poles, the new deal says that for the first 4 years, you only pay $1 a pole to really try to incentivize investment in areas where we just simply don't have the service. Mm-hmm. And then after the end of 4 years, it goes back to the agreed upon formula so that there will be fair compensation if the electric cooperatives had to pay to install and maintain that pole, that they certainly need to make sure that they are compensated. But we want to make it fair for everybody, because at the end of the day, if you're that person in rural Oklahoma that has had no options, it is vital that we figure out the best way to get you an option. And I think this is going to remove one of the last hurdles we've identified there. So I think that was has been a very tense situation, but it's proof that you can take a hard issue, and if you put enough pressure on both sides, you'll end up getting a mutually agree. If what's the old rule, that if nobody walks away happy, then there's probably been a good compromise forged. And I think everybody can live with where we're at on that one.
What else? Yeah, as far as things that you've been watching.
The one that really came out of nowhere this year on us, and really this week we were able to put together, was on county assessors and what's called unmanufactured farm products. For the first time, a lot of our members told us from the grassroots up that their county assessor, whenever they asked for the listing of their personal property, there was a spot on the form where they're asked how many bales of hay do you have stored, how many bushels of wheat, soybeans, other grain products. And as we dug into that, there was authority for the assessor to ask for that information. And there was a bit of a cloud over whether or not they could actually assess you personal property tax on that. And our folks were not real keen on having to provide that information for the first time, and really worried what was going on, and was an attempt to expand what they tax when it comes to agriculture production. And there were a lot of problems in how that would actually work. And so working with some of the better rural assessors, we were able to identify a way to just strike through some of that authority in the statute. Senator Brent Howard from Southwest Oklahoma inserted some language just this past week in a bill that is going to clean up that authority back to how we would have assumed it worked before, so that our folks don't have to report that and don't have to figure out some of the hurdles, and they're not put at risk for higher personal property taxes over something that they never had to do before, and there was never an action with which to authorize that new. So we're just cleaning up something that turned into a problem that we didn't know until this year. And if it weren't for our members and our partner organizations, I know Cattlemen's Association played a key role in that. Great friend Michael Kelsey helped us out a ton on that, and really was the point person in making sure that got cleaned up. And our team and his team worked together closely. And so I think that is going to be a major load off of a lot of our members' minds when they're concerned about, you know, when we deal with assessors and property tax, that's one of the things that's the biggest sore spot for our folks. And if we can take a concern off their mind and put it to rest, I think we've really achieved something positive.
I guess this is close to what you would call halftime. So what happens in the second half?
Now we sort of – everything turns itself upside down and flips. All the Senate stuff we're working on moves to the House, and vice versa. And you run it right back through the same process, and each side gets to look at what the other did. Mm-hmm. In a number of cases, it was sort of dual bills, so they'll be seeing the same issue. Sometimes it'll be new to them, and they'll take another cut at it there and narrow the playing field a little bit. So we'll have a few weeks of committee work, and then a few more weeks of floor work, and then those pesky issues that there was no final agreement go to a conference committee to be worked out. But the things that are on a smooth fast track, we're hoping in another month or so we'll have done, and well, then we'll be able to reserve that last month of the year for those issues that really require a lot of compromise and negotiation, and some of the key budget things become more into focus at that point in time, and the major projects that leadership has start to emerge. So we reverse field on this, and we'll be right back in Ag Committee and other things in the next couple of weeks. Very excited to make sure that if there's anything we didn't catch the first go around, now's our second chance to make sure we get it right.
All indications are from the announcements, the Equalization Board, the lawmakers have got a fair amount of money to spend this time.
Budget is good. Budget is good. You know, we've all lived through the times when it wasn't. Things have been going well. The economy in Oklahoma, as compared to some of the states, has done really good. Applaud Governor Stitt and the efforts that he's done to keep our economy churning along. And also, you can't deny, even though we question whether it was wise or not at times, we've had a lot of federal money come down and pumped into that. So the state revenue is very strong right now. There are a number of proposals about sticking a little bit of that back in savings. Plus, I think they're going to be able to make some investments. One of our priorities has been all along is to try to get a little money to the Department of Ag for some large animal veterinary incentive programs that are on the books but been unfunded. And we're hearing good things that there may be a way to get a little bit of money to revitalize that program. We've had a little bit of rain, but we're still not out of a drought. There's been some ideas about investing in some emergency drought funds should they be needed throughout the rest of the year. And so agriculture has some real needs we hope that they could find their way clear to invest in. And that picture will become clearer as we move through the second half of the session. But thankfully, we're in a good situation where we might get to make some strategic investments as a state, as well as, again, save for the rainy day.